Hi everyone, I'm Amy Zellmer, and thank you for checking out today's YouTube episode. Today I am here with Dr. Beth Westy, and today Beth is going to be talking about three keys to hormone regulation after a TBI. And Dr. Beth Westy is a chiropractor, an author, and a women's health expert. And she lives in Bloomington with her husband and three kids. And I haven't really known Beth that long, but we met through our women's writing group, and we just really clicked. And so I'm really excited to have her here today talking to you guys about how, you know, the hormones get off kilter after a brain injury, along with a lot of other things. And so hopefully she can give you some really good pointers today to kind of help you get in the right direction. Because I know, Beth, you know, we go to our traditional medical doctors, they do blood work. Oh, your hormone levels are fine. I mean, I'm constantly told my hormone levels are fine. Even though, like, let's say normal is between 1 and 12, and I'm like 11.8. You know, like, they still consider it normal. So I'm going to let you kind of jump into your first key here.
Okay. So one of the things, and you actually brought up just a really good point, oftentimes women get really frustrated, especially after having a major injury, and I mean, not to mention a brain injury nonetheless. Because they'll go in and they'll be told everything's normal or fine. Well, oftentimes those set points, those averages, aren't necessarily taken on women that are going through what you're going through. So there's sort of a very wide, we'll say, guesstimate on what's normal. So the biggest key I tell women is that if you're still feeling off, if you're still feeling like something's not there, keep looking, keep going. Don't stop just because someone told you, oh, you're fine. If you don't feel fine, then something is more than likely still off. So there, for whatever that's worth.
I agree.
Yeah.
You know, that was me and my eyes. I kept saying, my eyes aren't okay. My eyes aren't okay. And everybody kept saying, oh, your eyes are fine. Your eyes are fine. And then I finally, you know, 2.5 years later, found a doctor who's like, yeah, your eyes aren't okay. So it's like, ah.
Yes. Exactly. And the other thing too with hormones, when you bring hormones into it, is that it's really tough because hormones shift in the body, they change, they can take a long time to show up. And depending on what's going on internally, sometimes that doesn't even show on the outside, or even with blood tests or things like that, that doesn't necessarily show what's actually going on, because hormones can be stored within fat cells. And then even though you're taking a blood draw, that's only testing what's free floating in your body. That doesn't actually show what's stored in your body. So there's that difference too. And it's also just kind of tough because you can feel lethargic. You can feel like a pile of garbage kind of, and you'll look fine, you know, like, oh, you look okay. What's wrong with you? You know, and you're like, I'm struggling. I'm fatigued. I'm exhausted. I have this brain fog. I can't think. I'm memory issues, all these other things that can go on because of, you know, an offset in hormones. And then especially after a brain injury, you're going to have damage to, you know, the hypothalamus, the pituitary, which is in control of all these hormone systems. So with hormones in general, it's a negative feedback loop that tells your body how much hormone to release. But if the beginning of that system is off kilter, it's not going to get that negative feedback and be able to control things appropriately.
So, and with women, our hormones are going up and down all month long.
Yes,
unless you're pre or post, you know, menstrual, but it's like, it's a roller coaster anyway. I have noticed my up and down, like my PMS is substantially worse than it was before my brain injury.
Yeah.
And I have no doubt it has to do with the hormones.
Yeah. Because it's really tough for your body to kind of get control of that.
And I was actually just at a conference, and one of the researchers was talking about progesterone and how progesterone has been found to help in brain injury recovery. And you know, obviously men have a lot more of that than women. And so I find that really interesting too, on the difference between men and women healing.
Yes. Yeah. So women go through these shifts and changes in hormone every month, even if they've, you know, had been on birth control or hysterectomy, yeah. menopausal, all these other things, you still have a shift in your body. It might not be on the same scale, but these things still occur. And it's just such a long process. It takes at least 3 months for these hormones to shift and change in the body. So it is tough to go for an extended period of time for people. It's 3 months to notice, okay, I'm going to try this one thing and then stick with it right. for 3 months to get this change. That's a long time, you know, to figure out if what you're doing worked.
And people with brain injury, we forget, like, I mean, my doctor put me on a bunch of different nutritional supplements, and I literally like had to write it out. Like, I have to take this in the morning, take this at lunch, take this before bed. And even then, like, I forget. So it's just like, it's an uphill battle.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So I would say the top three things when we talk about hormones and recovering from brain injury, because there's so much of this up and down, it's, you know, it's all about the self-care and getting the right things in your body. Your body's been through a traumatic experience, and there's no base set point anymore. You know, the brain controls everything else in the body. And normally it's at this base set point that can fluctuate from different things. Oh, I, you know, sprained my ankle, or oh, I got the flu or something like that. But with the brain injury, what keeps your set point there is not running on all cylinders. So, right. And it takes, you know, who knows how long sometimes to heal. So, but in that process, it's really important that you're sticking to a few key things to keep your physical body at its best. So you're not, you know, once you really start to heal from the brain injury, that you're not starting off like in a huge, you know, divot or, you know, hole that you have to climb out of then to start to really feel better overall. Most people statistically, when they have a brain injury, their lean muscle mass decreases significantly and their body fat percentage increases significantly because of the systems that are just thrown off in the body. So this is to kind of help control, you know, I don't want to say control, but help manage the hormones a little bit better so that you can maintain lean muscle mass and keep your body fat percentage in check. That way your physical body can come around better and faster. So a couple of things with so we'll go over nutrition, sleep, and then exercise. So we'll start with nutrition, and the nutrition piece of it. There's so many different takes on nutrition and everything. And
there's 101 diets out there for brain injury.
They are, but yeah. So here are some key basics to kind of follow. For women, I recommend following nutrition for your cycle, and that's kind of the basis for my book that I have that's coming out. But really key things baseline are to work with proteins. Is that a good size? You can see that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Proteins, fats, and carbs. So with proteins, fats, and carbs, you're going to want to have something from each of these categories in your meal, in every meal, snack, everything that you eat. And that's because it completes everything out. This is going to help level your blood sugars out. It's going to help your metabolism keep going. It's going to support lean muscle mass, everything else. So with healthy fats, I mean, your nervous system, your brain tissue, and everything else needs fat to help protect it. Mm-hmm. Protein, every cell in your body uses protein. And to support that lean muscle mass, having an even higher protein diet is just going to naturally help support lean muscle mass. Even if you're not doing heavy workouts or lifting or anything like that, you can maintain it a lot easier by having a higher protein diet. And then the last thing is carbohydrates. Now your brain works by carbohydrates. So if people who are like, oh shoot, I really want to lose weight, or I'm trying to, you know, get healthier, I'm going to cut carbs, you may see a short-term result, but long-term, you're damaging how your nervous system, how your brain is going to respond to your metabolism and everything going forward.
One of my good friends, she's a brain injury survivor. She recently trained for a weightlifting competition, or the physique bodybuilding. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they have a very strict diet, and at one point you have to no carbs at all for like 2 weeks before the competition. And she was like, my head is so foggy. She's like, I haven't been this foggy in years. Mm-hmm. And so it was really interesting how that affected her brain when she was training for that competition.
Yes, absolutely. And on the other aspect of it, that if you are craving carbs, if you're feeling like, I need sugars, I need carbs right now, oftentimes that's a reaction either to stress in your body or it's your brain tissue really trying to heal itself. And in combination of both, oftentimes just getting through everyday life can be really taxing on your mental capacity, on your mental energy. So you're going to want to crave carbs more. But by having a balanced nutrition, you know, protein, fats, and carbs in every, you know, snack meal that you're eating, you're going to be able to stay ahead of the game. And those cravings, it's not like they're going to go away, but they're going to be less, they're going to be, you know, less frequent, less intense. And you're not going to be finding yourself like eating a whole bag of, you know, chips or Doritos or something at once for that pick me up, you know?
One of my snacks I've started incorporating, because I'm really guilty of that. Like before bed, I always need a snack. So I try to eat, I like cut up an apple, and I am a big fan of goat cheese. And so I get like the goat cheese with like blueberries or cranberries on it. And so I'm like, that's kind of been my little nighttime snack. But because goat cheese isn't classified as a dairy. So that's why I choose goat cheese.
Yeah. Yes. So food in general, you know, yes, dairy can be inflammatory. So that can be another thing to try and avoid for people. Recovering and really working on hormones and everything else, avoid foods that are inflammatory, like red meat, gluten, dairy, sugars, all that stuff, which is, it can be tough to do, but can be really beneficial. Another, like, we'll say small tip that that you can try is incorporating a high amount of protein about 30 minutes before you go to bed. Yes. So what this does is it really works with the natural growth hormone that's released in the body at night while you're sleeping. So growth hormone is most active between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. So if you're getting at least 20 grams of protein before you're going to bed, so like a
couple, 20 grams?
Yeah. You want like a, you know, a more, you know, more significant amount, more than just like a handful of almonds or something like that. You want like some solid protein, you know, and it can be even like an egg white pancake, you know, egg white protein pancake, something like that. Or a few pancakes, you know, and this is a dairy, but Greek yogurt, like a cup of Greek yogurt has like 23 grams of protein in it. Mm-hmm. So something like that will help kick off the body's natural, release of growth hormone and work with that. It's going to help support lean muscle mass. It's going to help really repair cell damage a lot faster while you're sleeping. So 20 minutes, 20, 30 minutes before you go to bed, having that 20 grams of protein.
What about a protein shake?
Protein shake. Great. Yeah. Again, the one thing you want to be careful of is that it's not too high in sugar.
Yeah. Yep.
Especially before bed. Yeah. But again, and the same thing for a protein shake is like all your other meals. There should be protein, fat, and carb in your protein shake. Sometimes shakes only have protein in it.
Right.
Great, but you're missing the other components that are going to round it out for you. That's going to keep your metabolism going. So because internally what would normally keep your metabolism going is thrown off kilter. So you have to use all these external factors, like what you're eating, to keep your body moving. Yeah.
Awesome.
That kind of makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And you were going to also mention meal planning, meal prepping.
Yes. Yeah. So because this is harder to do and to remember all the time, or, you know, even for people who don't have brain injuries, this can be hard to do.
Right.
What's with this? So, I do have actually, right now a Kickstart. It's a 2-week Kickstart. It goes through grocery lists, meal plans, cleaning out your pantry. So you're getting rid of all this junk that you shouldn't have around. It goes through some basic foundational exercise things. Yeah. So there's a link that you can click on and download that for free for, you know, 2 whole weeks of it to kind of get started on it. It's a great beginning step to moving towards health. But also things like Pinterest, they'll have really healthy, you know, you can just in Pinterest, you can search meal prep and they'll have all these sample meals that are really, really easy to follow. And having those prepped for your week makes it a million times easier to stay on track. So it's just as simple as like getting containers, getting like little Tupperware containers, picking a day. Usually it's, you know, a Saturday or Sunday that I do my meal prep, getting a bunch of chicken or turkey or whatever it is that you're making for your meals to prep them and preparing it, putting it in there and putting them in the fridge. I have to label mine because I live with other people and they will eat my meals because it's right there.
It's easy.
Oh, look at this delicious meal all ready to go. No, that's fine. So there is that. But meal prepping with all these three categories is going to help keep you on track. So having the right tools like that makes the biggest difference ever. That way you're not finding yourself, if you like, say you're running late or you come home late and you're like, oh, I'm super hungry. I can either shove cookies in my mouth or I can heat up my prepared meal.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, you know, nutrition, some basic nutrition things to kind of keep in mind and follow moving forward. Next thing, sleep. Sleep is really, really important for the release of specific hormones, regulating things in the body, and to keep things moving forward on like a healthy path. Now, again, it can be really tough to sleep when your brain won't wind down. It does, you know, the normal things that you used to do to go to sleep don't work anymore, or they're not as effective, or you're waking up in the middle of the night. Sleep can be a really big challenge after a brain injury, and that can actually slow the healing process when that happens over and over and over again. So a few tips for sleep. These are, I want to say, basic tips that are good for anybody. One is no screens before bed. Most of the time, the recommendation is at least 30 minutes before bed, but I would actually increase that to about an hour because the processing system, your brain has to have time to process. And it's really the blue light that's within the like screens, you know, phones, iPads, computer screens that messes with your brain function in terms of getting it to shut off and calm down.
My iPhone, in its most recent software update, it has, it's called bedtime or sleep time or something like that. So you tell it what time you want to go to bed. So say it's 10 o'clock and it reminds you a half hour before and it turns your screen to a much more yellow hue.
Yes.
And that's supposed to be like helpful and it's supposed to help trigger you. Oh, start getting ready for bed. And so I found that to be really cool.
Yes. Yeah. Little things like that make a really big difference. So I make sure you're doing that at least an hour before going to bed. That would just be my kind of recommendation on that. So the screens before bed, there's other little things you can do besides the eating protein before bed. That's going to help release, some different hormones in the body while you're sleeping to help have you stay asleep, have a deep sleep and everything else, wake up feeling more refreshed and more energized. is lavender. Lavender is a great, like, essential oil.
Yep.
That's wonderful to use on the body. And it's a very gentle oil. I mean, make sure you're getting something that's, you know, clean, because sometimes they can be processed with junk, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's another thing too, that can slow the healing process, is if you're eating food or surrounding yourself with chemicals, toxins, you know, everything else in the body, that's, you know, it does affect how fast your cells respond, and everything in brain healing is on a cellular level. So that's the big thing to kind of think about all the time. So with lavender oil, you know, you can put it, I do this for my kids too. I put a few drops in my hand, I mix in some coconut oil and I'll rub on their backs, on their spines, and then I'll rub on the bottom of their feet. Your feet actually have the biggest pores in your entire body, which is kind of cool. I think it's cool. So it gets absorbed and the essence of it really helps you relax really, really well.
And I've also heard when you get out of the shower or the bathtub, that's a really good time to put it on the bottom of your feet, because then they're more open.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. The heat opens up those pores even more. Absolutely. So the light, not an hour before bed, lavender oil is really, really great. And then sometimes people incorporate things like chamomile tea, or melatonin, things like that. Also good. And again, some people worry about the habit forming, you know, if it's going to be habit forming for them to take something to go to sleep, you know, like melatonin. And as long as it's not used, you know, really long term, you know, you want it to be done in shorter terms of time, it to get to sleep, your healing is going to happen faster when you are able to sleep better. So that's kind of, I would say, the biggest key there. Sometimes having a cooler temperature in the room, mm-hmm. a fan going can really, really help. Also tons of meditations that you can do at night that can really help. Again, some people have a hard time meditating. I'm one of them. I get 30 seconds in and I'm like, what's this? But yeah. Little things like that make a big difference overall when you're combining them. Mm-hmm. And it's a process. It feels sometimes like, oh, this is a lot of work. This is a lot of effort. Like my whole day is going to just these things now.
Yeah.
But it works when you do that. So yeah. And then the last piece is the exercise. So a few things about exercise is oftentimes your normal routines are not going to be easily maintained when you're recovering from a brain injury. Right.
Especially if you have physical injuries in addition.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So pending whatever your, you know, restrictions are, a few things to look at for exercise are, one is stretching. Stretching, and then we'll talk about weights, and then we'll talk about high intensity interval training. So stretching is going to be really important because your body system does need to reset, and you can actually train your body and train and get muscle memory by stretching. So if it's yoga, you know, great yoga, I think, is fantastic for so many people and not widely used enough, which is a form of stretching and balance and everything.
And I think too many people don't think they can do yoga.
Yes.
And you know, I had a piece published in Yoga Magazine, and how I couldn't lift my arms higher than here. I couldn't tip at all cause I'd get dizzy, but I still did my yoga. I like held on to a chair and lifted my leg. That was yoga. And so people just, they have this, you know, they see all these core power yoga classes, and that's not what's going to help you. I just do it at home. I spend like 10 minutes. I can't do more than about 10 to 15 minutes of it, but man, it really helped me get my body back, into moving.
Yeah. So how did you get started in yoga?
Well, I started in yoga 20 years ago. So I've been doing yoga, and so, you know, I had a dislocated sternum, I had whiplash and all this other crap on top of my brain injury. But my yoga instructor came and we worked one-on-one, and we came up because I couldn't tip my head back or forward, and I couldn't do any like weird, I couldn't do anything with balance. But she found me 5 poses. I did tree holding onto that chair, and I did like cat cow. I did seated just twisting. And I can't remember what the other ones were. I did like, where you lean forward over your leg, just anything, cause you can keep your head very neutral in those things, and you're sitting on the floor, so you're not going to fall. And just doing those for a couple months, and then I'd eventually like try other things. And then eventually I got into down dog, and, you know, it took time. It didn't happen overnight, but
yeah.
And then once I got my range of motion back and I got my dizzy balance in check, then I could start incorporating weights.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's so, so doing yoga for 20 years and you sort of had to start from scratch.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But getting that stretch in that muscle tissue provides such great feedback for your body. And again, because this is part of taking care of the physical body while the brain tissue is healing. Mm-hmm. Cause the brain tissue has a hard time keeping the physical body in check. So stretching, and there's, to your point, there's a lot of really great stuff. Lots of YouTube videos. There's so much great stuff online that you can find to just simply follow and have it work for you. Weights. So to support lean muscle mass and to help build, that strength, stamina, everything else. incorporating some weights, and this does not have to be going to the gym and lifting things heavy. It can be taking a soup can and just sitting there in a chair and lifting it, you know, like this, or even just lifting it above your head, whatever, getting some type of compression or additional weight to your body frame will give you a benefit, and it can go at whatever pace you need it to go at. I've done, you know, some workout things where I've had no access to a gym or anything else, where I literally took empty milk jugs and filled them with water and did lifting stuff with that. I mean, you can get creative and find heavy things to pick up. That's essentially what picking up heavy things.
And resistance bands.
Resistance bands. Yes. Perfect. Just adding that extra effort in to whatever fitness you're doing. And weightlifting is really important, especially for women. You got to do some type of weight bearing activity to help keep your bone density. Cause that's another thing that can be really tough for women, especially recovering from a brain injury. If you're not doing any type of, you know, putting any axial pressure on their skeleton, your bone density can decrease. And, you know, with everything else, with your muscle tissue wanting to, you know, atrophy more, or, you know, lessen more, having that extra pressure is going to help with bone maintenance so, so much, especially if you're prone to osteoporosis or something. Whew, sorry. Am I talking too fast? Sometimes I get excited and I just talk fast. Okay. The last thing is interval training, high intensity interval training. So this is sort of a buzzword. People talk about this a lot. For brain injury recovery, the importance of doing high intensity interval training is that it's done in short spurts and you get a recovery period with it. So starting at your own pace, they have, or Tabatas are a great thing to start with. Tabatas you can find, again, you can Pinterest those, Google search those. There's tons of routines. Can you see that on there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Tabatas are great, and you can get an app. I have an app on my phone that takes me through a timer, you know, 20 seconds on, 10 second rest, 20 seconds on, 10 second rest. And you can even have them tell you what exercises to do. Of course, within your own capacity, within your own, you know, ability to do these exercises. The reason why these are so important is that if you do a round of Tabata exercises for even 8 minutes, 10 minutes, 12 minutes, something like that, you're getting the cardiovascular benefit. You're building some energy, all these other things, but it's a short enough time where it's not stressing your body out more. When your body's already under a lot of stress and trying to heal, when you exercise for more than 30 minutes, your body will release cortisol, extra cortisol, because your body sees it as a stressor. More than 30 minutes of, you know, intense exercise. I'm going to go on a treadmill and I'm going to run for an hour. Great. But after 30 minutes, your body's going to release cortisol in response to that. So keep it less than that and do some intense interval training, you know, however intense it is for you and or Tabatas. And that's going to really, really help your body get in physical shape without the extra cortisol involved. So that's the biggest key there, because that extra cortisol, that extra stress hormone on the body is really tough to process and will decrease the healing time as well. Yeah.
I know last summer I had attempted to start getting back into running and I just couldn't. My heart rate, my autonomic system is just, it's still a little messed up. And so my heart rate just goes no matter what I do. And so I've tried getting back into cardio and it's just extremely hard. My friend encouraged me, just try walking. She's like, walk a mile or 2 miles. And so I started doing, I started at a mile and then I gradually built that up to 2 miles. And I did it every single day. And I mean, I lost weight. I felt amazing. So, you know, like you don't have to kill yourself to try to get healthy and exercise. So many people think that you have to just like, you know, like you were just talking about, don't do more than 30 minutes. You know, so many people just try so hard, like I need to do 60 minutes of high intensity. And it's like, you're actually doing the opposite of what you're trying to do. I actually lost way more weight and everything with just walking. And I was still doing yoga. So it's, and I was incorporating weight training, and I mean, you can even walk with weights in your hands too. I mean, there's so many things you can do. And it's just so important just to do something.
Yeah.
Especially if you're feeling, you know, we tend to get isolated and depressed, mm-hmm. and there's nothing better for depression than exercise. Like just, for me, I would walk outside and just getting out there in nature and walking.
Yeah.
It felt so good until it was 110 degrees out. I still did it. And now we have 2 feet of snow. So, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think sometimes also for people, especially if they were an athlete and they got an injury,
yeah.
you know, during a sports activity or something. I mean, I was an athlete in high school and in college and beyond. And going from intense workouts to something much less in your own head, it's tough.
Yeah.
It's really, really tough because it's not what you used to do. Your body can't handle that, all that other stuff. So you're like, geez, I didn't even break that much of a sweat. How much of a workout can this be? But it's what your body needs, and everything is going to be at a different pace. You're essentially starting from scratch, blank yep. slate. Yeah. Which is tough. It's tough. It's a tough thing, like mentally and emotionally, to do. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, awesome. Thank you, Beth. This is such great information. And I think, you know, this is all stuff we hear
yeah.
over and over and over again. But it's like, you need to put it into action. And, you know, talking about the nutrition and meal prepping, and I've tried really hard. I got rid of all the crap in my cupboards, mm-hmm. and I have to still have like that cookie or something in my cupboard, because otherwise, if I just go absolutely crazy, I'll go out to the vending machine and get a bunch of crap. So yeah. I still like keep something in my house for when that mm-hmm. happens. But like I try to have fruits and cheese and nuts mm-hmm. and I eat yogurt, tons of Greek yogurt. So I try to have things that I can really easily go snack on
yeah.
That are healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. Having those little things around makes a big difference overall, as you're having more healthy things than a bunch of chips and candy or something.
And yeah. you know, with TBI people, you know, a lot of memory problems and being able to get into a routine. Routine is so helpful with brain injury. I know I have a little whiteboard and I write my routine on it, and it sounds so silly. Like friends come over and look at it. It's like, it says, take Pixie out for a walk, feed Pixie, start the coffee maker, eat breakfast. I mean, like I literally have it on a whiteboard, so I can look at it, you know, take supplements. And I mean, it's what we have to do to cope.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think more people would be more efficient and productive if they use lists.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. 'Cause it's one less thing that you have to actively think about.
Right.
Save your energy for more important stuff.
Exactly.
Yes.
So thank you so much for being here, Beth. I will post, the link to your 2-week challenge so that people can get those free, prep lists and everything. And I will have a link to your website and everything as well. But thank you so much. I appreciate it. This is great.
Yeah. It's my pleasure.
Thank you everyone for watching. I hope you got some really good information. And if you have any questions, you can leave them in the comments below. Thanks everyone. Mm-hmm.